We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m., and if you missed us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8. You can also check out the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
Make sure you're following us on all social media because we out here.
Yes.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram,
yes.
House Party,
yes.
YouTube,
there.
Twitch, Black Planet. I know y'all talking about our OnlyFans. It's going crazy in there. MySpace, Tinder, catch us ticking on the TikTok and Google Plus.
In this episode, we'll be putting you up on day 2 of the Astroworld Festival's canceled due to 8 deaths and multiple injuries on its first day. And Portland landlord Leon Drennan pleads guilty to pulling a gun on a tenant last year.
Yes. And Portland Street Response launches a night shift. And we have the latest from Kyle Rittenhouse's trial.
But let's get right into it. Former owner of the Stewart Hotel pled guilty to pulling a gun on tenants. Downtown Portland landlord Leon Drennan, 75, has pled guilty to multiple criminal charges stemming from an incident in which he pulled a gun on a tenant last year. On August 13, 2020, Torrance Hunter, a resident of the Stewart Hotel on Southwest Broadway, recorded the video in which Drennan could be seen pulling a handgun at Hunter and using racial slurs. Well, I mean, that part doesn't surprise me. Property records showed the building was sold earlier this year, and at the time of the incident, Drennan was the owner. The same building also housed what used to be the popular strip club, Mary's Club. Torrance Hunter called police, and Drennan was arrested. He was charged with 15 counts, including multiple counts of second-degree assault, unlawful use of a weapon, menacing, and bias crimes. The first 9 counts pertain to the incident with Hunter. The other 6 pertain to an incident involving 2 other residents, Latif Bossman and Cambria Coney. Bossman told KGW News last year that there had been another incident on July 1st in which Drennan pulled out a gun while talking to a fellow resident. So he's wild.
Wild.
Bossman said he verbally intervened, at which point Drennan pointed the gun at him and called him the N-word. Court documents state that Coney was the other resident involved in that incident. Drennan is white. Hunter, Bossman, and Coney are all black. Bossman and Hunter each separately sued Drennan over the incidents. Hunter's lawsuit alleged that in addition to pointing the handgun at him, Drennan struck him in the head with the crowbar, pistol whipped him, and called him the N-word during the August 13th incident. That's a lot.
What?
Bossman's lawsuit sought up to $4.5 million in damages, and Hunter sought up to $6 million. Drennan accepted a plea deal in the criminal case in which he pled guilty to 1 count of second-degree assault plus 1 count of unlawful use of a weapon and 1 count of first-degree bias crime with a firearm. All 3 charges pertain to the incident with Hunter. Guilty plea for the assault charge also carries a sentence of no weapons, firearms, or ammunition, a drug and alcohol evaluation, and any recommended treatment and emotions management class per Drennan's parole officer. The lawsuits have since been settled, and Bossman had accepted $185,000 in compensation. The Hunter lawsuit was also settled, but the amount is currently unknown.
So you do this stuff all the time, Drennan?
This is his, Yeah, this is every day.
He was gonna up it at a moment's notice, clearly.
Crowbars?
But to keep the N-word keep popping up.
Yeah. Yeah. Bruh.
Crowbar is so 90s too.
Yo, not only is it so 90s, when you pull out the crowbar, there is a level of destruction and damage that you're trying to cause that's unmatched by pretty much any other thing you can hold in your hand.
When is the last time you saw a crowbar in the wild?
Period.
Like in the 90s, I feel like those were a lot more visible in just your day-to-day life.
Right. Right. Unless you're doing demolitions, why do you have a crowbar?
Yeah. I guess he owns a building, maybe having to break into the steel.
Yeah. I mean, but you're right. Like, that's wild. That's wild.
Yeah, like all the way down. Yeah. Very interesting also, the bias crimes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not familiar with that term.
Oh, for being assaulted with the N-word?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that does weigh in sentencing.
Okay.
Yeah. When they put that on top, hate crimes, bias crimes, it does weigh a little bit heavier on the
side. Yeah. And see, that's what I was familiar with, hate crime, but just not hearing bias crime. I was like, I didn't know if they dressed up hate crime now and called it bias crime to kind of soften the
bill. Put a little polish on it. Yeah. But that's wild. I mean, this is a downtown establishment.
Yeah.
I don't know where Mary's Club is or where it used to be.
I feel like I remember the sign. Like, when as soon as, you know, that part was said, visual.
Yeah, it says it's off of Broadway. But this is, like, during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Not much more than a year, a little over a year ago. These are your residents.
Right.
So here it is. You're a landlord downtown. You have black and brown residents, and you're using the N-word. So you didn't want to. You honestly, if you ain't have to, you wouldn't rent to them anyway.
Wait, and I just struck him in the head with the crowbar and pistol whipped.
Bruh. And dude, okay, so he's 75 now, so he was 74 last year when he was doing this. Okay. So you know what? This actually makes a little bit more sense.
Okay.
This makes a little bit more sense.
Okay.
When you have someone of that age, there's a lot more that they can get off with, get away with, before you're defending yourself within.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that does actually make more sense. This crazy old white dude came at me with a crowbar. And he connected. Like, honestly, I feel like there might be an age bracket in which your ability to connect raises.
Yeah.
Once you, like, 60 and 70, you swinging stuff, whoa.
Yeah, you made a great, that was a great observation. Because, yeah, when you take that age into, and I mean, don't get me wrong, we know some 75-year-olds out there can hit you with a shuffle foot.
Right.
but there's definitely, you know, quite a few that crowbar swing may have just been.
Yeah.
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 Wow. But I still ain't trying to see no crowbar coming my way.
Nah, man. No. You got to sweep the leg. Listen.
But you got to point first, because I feel like at 75, people still fall for the, what's that? And they're going to turn around. And then you kick the back of their knee, and then it's like, ah.
Oh, my God, look out.
Maybe taking like 6 years to fall, too. So you got enough time to like pull out your phone, swipe over, pull up the camera app.
Catch them on the way down. Boom. All right. One of y'all call the police, because I'm not.
Man, speaking of police showing up places.
Yikes.
Astro World Fest organizers are facing the first two of what will sure to be more lawsuits.
Yikes.
A lawsuit has been filed following the Astro World Festival tragedy that left 8 people dead and dozens injured in Houston on Friday night. A concert goer who was injured during the festival is suing rapper and producer Travis Scott, who was the organizer of the Astro World Festival, as well as entertainment company Live Nation, concert promoter Scoremore, and others involved in the event, according to the lawsuit obtained by CNN. Manuel Sousa suffered serious bodily injuries when the uncontrolled crowd at the concert knocked him to the ground and trampled him. According to the lawsuit filed in Harris County, Texas, defendants failed to properly plan and conduct the concert in a safe manner. The lawsuit continued. Instead, they consciously ignored the extreme risk of harm to concert goers and in some cases actively encouraged and fomented dangerous behaviors. Their gross negligence caused plaintiff serious injuries. A jury trial is preferred to determine the exact amount of damages. According to the lawsuit, Basalza is seeking monetary relief of over $1 million. Hmm. The Friday night crowd at the sold-out Astro World Festival was so tightly packed that when the audience members were pushed towards the stage, they were crushed to the point that they couldn't breathe and passed out. Yikes. Man. Scott took the stage for his set shortly after 9 p.m. Officials said that they were made aware of crowd surges early in his set and received the first reports of injuries at approximately 9:30 p.m. It is unclear what Scott saw from the stage and whether he was aware of the crowd conditions at the time, but he continued to perform until approximately 10:10 p.m. That's about 40 minutes after the first reports of injuries were made to officials and just over 30 minutes after officials declared the concert a mass casualty event. Yeesh. According to time given by Houston Fire Chief Samuel Pena at a news conference Saturday morning, video from the concert's live stream also shows Scott pausing his performance and looking on in apparent confusion as an ambulance pulled into the crowd. He began performing again, but later stopped the concert. Scott gave his first on-camera statement in a video posted to his Instagram account Saturday night. "I'm honestly devastated," Scott said as he repeatedly sighed and rubbed his forehead. "We're actually working right now to identify the families so we can help assist them through this tough time." The Houston Police Department tweeted Sunday, "The investigation into the tragedy is active and in its early stages." The lawsuit alleges Scott actively encourages his fans to rage at his concerts. His expressed encouragement of violence has previously resulted in serious violence at numerous past concerts.
Yikes. I mean, I know they be moshing at his concerts, and that sounds like what they're describing him inciting.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, par for the course with rock shows, alternative shows, yeah. Just some, you know, shows in general. Festivals definitely do turn up. Yeah, he's also been coming under fire for the apology. Like, people have been saying it didn't seem sincere. It's been a lot. There's been a lot I've been hearing and seeing.
Yeah.
Loving this. I did hear that, like, one of the first surges happened when he brought out Drake.
Yeah, so that was what, and that's what I caught also. Was listening to actually some reports from some of the people that were at the concert.
Okay.
That got interviewed, and they talked about, like, how packed it was for one in the sway, and they talked about it being like a wave, where the people in the back pushing forward, trying to get closer to the stage, the people in the front trying to lean back for space. So it kept being like this rocking kind of motion. And to the point that people were so close together, they were like, it was moments in this rocking that like their feet were leaving the ground.
Oh my goodness.
And feeling like as if they were being moved without their feet doing anything. And then what I also heard, and you know, not to throw anything out, but this is one of the news reports of one of the police that spoke to one of the Houston officers that was speaking about the event did say that there was one of the people had a prick in the neck that goes with what a needle would be. And there was some speculation that there was possibly people injecting things into people at the concert because... Yeah. So they was just nutty, right? And to be in this experience, I did see some video of like some of the concert goers getting up. I think it was a young college woman that got up on stage trying to like yelling at the camera operators like, we need something to happen. Now. That's what was kind of coming off from what I was seeing. And there was another couple that were saying that the crowd had started chanting to like stop the show.
Oh,
like help stop the show. And they said like that Travis, they couldn't tell if he hurt, but he was like, he did stop momentarily to like what's going on type exchange.
Right. Right.
But yeah, nutty all the way around. When I got that first, you know, news clipping sent to me about this, it was like, you know, 8 cardiac arrests. And I'm like, wait, heart attacks are just being had. And I'm like, okay. My first thought was like, oh, they got the fentanyl that made it into the crowd. That was my initial. And then thinking, you know, this is probably one of the biggest concerts since we've been back outside.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like he has a different type of following.
Exactly. Yeah. When I heard about the heart attacks too, I did think that it had something to do with the crowd actually just being too too dense. Like whether it was from heat or whatever, just I felt like there was some type of external stress that was causing the heart attacks. So you just don't have a whole bunch of heart attacks.
Right, right.
Concert. I will say this about the officer making any speculations and about people being pricked in the neck and like, I mean, we crack this joke around every year around Halloween when that meme goes out about keep an eye on your kids' candy and brownies because people are sneaking edibles. Like, no one's giving drugs away for free.
Yeah.
No one's doing free drugging.
That's
it's not a thing. So I'm not sure what this officer is talking about.
No free drugs around here, boy.
No. And the legal ones, the ones that are legal federally, are super expensive. You know what I'm saying? Like, what are you talking about? Better. There are a lot of parties culpable right now, though. I can understand all the emphasis and attention being placed on Travis because it's his festival. He's on stage. All this happened.
Yeah.
You know? But there is a huge, you know, organization that is responsible for running that festival. You know, Live Nation. There are teams on the ground there. There are a couple people in a couple key positions that weren't on the job because it's definitely not whether it's Travis or any performer that was on stage. Because sure, whoever else was on the bill, that could have happened during their set too.
Right.
So it's not really for the performer that's on stage that's dealing with their ear monitors, their stage monitors, their performance to be able to be aware of what is taking place in that crowd. Like, that's everyone else's job. And you have boom camera operators. Like, being able to watch some of these concerts on Tidal via Live Nation, you feel like you're there. Like, there are cameras everywhere. I feel like, you know, there were just some terrible decisions made, and people were ignoring some of the early signs of, you know, some changes they should have made to keep everybody safe, because that's wild, man.
I do want to say for the people, because I did watch, you know, the Travis apology video, and you know, I really hate when people, I don't know, I just have a reaction, an immediate response when people get to talking about somebody's sincerity.
Yeah.
You know, in a moment of, especially in, you know, piggybacking off of something as crazy as this happening.
Yeah.
And it's like, stop.
Yeah.
You know, this guy is how this is affecting him in this moment, you know, being that it seems like he's connected to his fans in a different type of way also. Yeah. Like, I feel like he actually is one of the artists that really rock with his fans in a certain type of way and tries to create an experience when they come to his concert. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's a lot that goes in from his, you know, portion. And for this to have happened there, him trying to process that.
Right.
And then jumping on to say something and then to be attacked. Like, come on, guys.
Because he couldn't not say something. You know, right? Any longer amount of time spent him trying to process this, he also would have gotten, you know, attacked for that as well.
Right.
There was no real way to for him to navigate this without any criticisms. It's definitely going to happen. And then also people that are projecting what they felt was insincere from him. These are people that, one, aren't in that circumstance, like you already laid out. But two, if you were in that circumstance, the first thing you would want to do is pass the buck. The first thing you would want to do is make sure that doesn't necessarily fall on you. So you're automatically going to project that same feeling onto someone who is taking responsibility. Oof. Like, oof, that's not sincere. Oof. You don't really mean it.
Oof.
So, I mean, you know.
Yes.
Oh, man. Well, we do have some good news.
Let's talk about it.
Portland Street Response picks up additional shifts. So great. Portland Street Response, which dispatches a mental health worker and a paramedic to most daytime mental health crisis calls in Southeast Portland's Lentz neighborhood, started taking calls late into the night last Thursday. While the original team had limited hours, the two teams now will be able to cover 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and 6 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. Thursday through Sunday. Initially, the single team worked within a 13-mile boundary in the Lentz neighborhood. Now the program will reach across 36 square miles in Portland Police Bureau's East Precinct. The areas sit between Southeast 39th Avenue and Northeast 162nd Avenue and Interstate 84 and Southeast Clatsop Street. At the launch of the program, Portland Street Response was designed to operate within boundaries that lined up with Portland fire and rescue areas. However, moving forward, the team will operate within a service area that matches Portland Police Bureau's precinct boundaries to make dispatch more efficient. Portland Commissioner Joanne Hardesty, who oversees Portland Street Response, said this expansion means the team is one step closer to expanding to serve the whole city. I'm so excited that today we are ready to expand Portland Street Response to a larger portion of Portland's east side with a new shift coming on board, Hardesty said in a statement. I want to thank the Lentz neighborhood for being an incredible partner through this pilot and Portlanders throughout the city who have continued to express strong support for growing Portland Street Response. This is amazing.
Yes.
This is energy and efforts going in the right direction, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes. So as you think of like Central City Concern, I know that they're downtown a lot, you know, kind of helping out, just walking through the neighborhood, especially with a lot of the houseless population down there. And you can tell kind of have a rapport a little bit with, you know, some of the people I see regularly set up down there. Seeing that the street response is kicking up, there was Thursday, I was in the office downtown. It was definitely someone was having an episode outside for a good amount of time, like well over an hour.
Wow.
A lot of yelling, a lot of screaming. Like, it made me think of like what you would hear in like a scary movie as somebody's like being possessed type thing, like legit going crazy. And then there was a car that showed up on response, and I couldn't tell who the organization was.
Right.
But hopped out, got to talking, and I can hear him going back and forth. And we're probably talking for another 30 minutes, like trying to get this situation to come down a bit. At no point did the, you know, police show up, which, you know, glad. Like, and then there was even an exchange where I did see like a book fly out of, you know, offshoot, because I couldn't see everything from where I was at up in the building. But it was a moment that I had of like, you know, these moments where you have people coming to just address this and kind of trying to just deal with this instead of this turning into an arrest, this turning into a possible escalation by police contact, you know. And so as these street response teams, you know, for whatever programs they're a part of, it's like this more of this.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Like you say, you didn't see exactly what led up to the book being thrown, but we know what the reaction to that could have been had police been involved.
Right.
Something that simple, you know,
and you could tell that the people there were seasoned with this and were like, this isn't this there's I'm not in harm's way right now.
Right.
So,
right.
Shout out.
Yeah, that's really dope. That's really dope. I would love, I'm going to love to see more funding towards this effort. You know, the cops they're making a point of communicating that they are understaffed. They just need more cops. But if you have less work, 300
to be exact.
300 more. But if you have less work, then you will need more cops, right? That's what I'm thinking, you know?
You
know, they're calling for 300. There are currently 100 slots, if I'm correct, that are open right now on the PPB. They're having trouble filling the 100 openings they already have.
Are they going to pull a, what is that, like, was it New York? Is there somewhere right now that are sourcing officers with these sign-on bonuses? Or Texas?
Yeah, they've
is it Texas?
That. They have offered sign-on bonuses.
Yeah. Yeah.
25K.
Yeah. Like,
There's your motivation.
If I see a billboard, I might turn into a tagger.
Real quick. Let me see you climbing. Climbing some tag on billboard.
I gotta come up with a tag name.
I can see that. So I'm like, "Am I seen Cam up?" No, you did.
No, you didn't.
Pass me the salt. I'm not.
Well, getting from the, you know, some news we can kind of give behind to the guy.
Yeah.
We got some details from the first week of the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse. 18-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse was charged with homicide after he shot and killed not one, but two humans at a demonstration in Kenosha, Wisconsin in August 2020. The protests in Kenosha began after police shot Jacob Blake, a 29-year-old black man, on August 23rd, leaving him paralyzed from the waist down. Multiple nights of unrest followed, with rioters destroying police cars and burning and damaging businesses. On August 25th, ahead of the third night of protests, Rittenhouse, then 17 years old, drove from his home in Antioch, Illinois, across the state line into Wisconsin, where he intended to protect businesses from unrest. He was armed with an AR-15 style rifle. Rittenhouse faces seven total charges, including two counts of homicide, one reckless and one intentional, and two counts of recklessly endangering safety. He has pleaded not guilty to all charges. The defense will take over later next week. Whether Rittenhouse himself will testify is still an open question, in part because there has been so much video evidence of the events. Closing arguments are expected by the end of next week. On Thursday and Friday, the prosecution called two witnesses who were among the self-styled militiamen in Kenosha that night with the intention of protecting local businesses. Yeah. That included Ryan Balk, who described Rittenhouse as a little under-equipped and a little under-experienced, and a former Marine rifleman named Jason Lakowski, who was standing with Rittenhouse in the moments leading up to the shootings, armed with an AR-15. In his testimony, Lakowski described using a shout, shove, show, shoot philosophy that night for when he might be approached by an aggressive individual. First, he would try shouting at them. If that didn't work, then he would try to shove them, then show them his weapon, then finally shoot his weapon. Lakowski's testified that he never felt the need to progress past shout that night, including during his encounter with Rosenbaum shortly before Rittenhouse shot him. Rosenbaum was acting very belligerently, Lakowski said, yelling for Lakowski to shoot him and making sudden steps toward him, trying to provoke a reaction. Rather than shoot, Lakowski said he chose to turn away. I really didn't see him as a threat at all, to be honest with you, said Lakowski. On Thursday, Judge Bruce Schroeder dismissed one of the 20 jurors for making a joke about Jacob Blake, whose shooting by police triggered the protests. The public needs to be confident that this trial is a fair trial, Schroeder said. The juror, an older white man, was being escorted to his car on Wednesday evening by a court police officer when he told the joke. The officer then reported the joke to the court. It was my understanding, it was something along the lines of, why did the Kenosha police shoot Jacob Blake seven times, said Prosecutor Thomas Benger. It was my understanding that the rest of the joke is because they ran out of bullets.
Yikes.
It's clear that the appearance of bias is present, and it would seriously undermine the outcome of the case, Schroeder said as he dismissed the juror. Schroeder, who is currently the longest-serving judge in Wisconsin, had drawn public attention already during the case, in part due to his pretrial decision that prosecutors could not refer to those killed by Rittenhouse as victims, while the defense lawyers may call them rioters or looters. He's got strong opinions on how he conducts his courtroom, sometimes differently than other people do, said Janine Jeske, a retired Wisconsin Supreme Court justice who's also a law professor at Marquette University, in an interview with NPR. But he's knowledgeable, and he has a lot of experience, and you don't mess around in his courtroom. Wait a dang second. But he's knowledgeable and has a lot of experience. What does that have? What?
What's that got to do with it?
Like, with NT of the thing? Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah, he hopped on dismissing this juror in an attempt to make sure that he communicated to everyone that there will be no bias. But this is after.
But.
After you said the defense lawyers may refer to the victims as rioters or looters, what mm-hmm. evidence do you have of them looting? What evidence do you have of them rioting other than being there? Like you're passing judgment. Like, it's so crazy.
Nutty. Like, nutty, bro. Like,
yeah.
Upon first hearing that,
mm-hmm.
Where's the logic in that? Like, just to help me understand. Yeah. Now, if his idea was to not refer to them as victims.
And left it there. Right. Yeah.
What are we doing?
Yeah.
You know, I try to stay out of comment sections of things, but was definitely happened to read through a few things. And, you know, there was a dude that was like, if anybody thinks he's going to go down for the murder portion, it's like, I really feel like bad for you. Like maybe the gun stuff. Mm. Like, and as much as I wanted to be like, oh, shut up.
Right. You were just like, oh. I mean,
I was like,
we have very low expectations. Like,
yes. Very true.
I think at this point we've all watched this play out enough times to know that justice doesn't get served as frequently as it should. So this, you know, us feeling this way, yeah, no surprise. No.
And also reading that, talking to the business owners that he was supposedly coming to.
Right. You were yeah.
Said, mm-hmm. No, this was not, that. This wasn't a thing.
You have no contract to provide security, 17-year-old. No one contracted you to be here for this.
I'm definitely interested to see if he's going to take the stand.
I don't think he will. I think his defense is smart enough to keep him off the stand.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea of it is just like, it's ridiculous. It's literally like going to someone's house and fighting another member in that household because I'm protecting you from what was about to happen by somebody else in the house. Like, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Who asked you to show up? Who asked you to cross state lines with this gun?
And think about this. We saw what, after this happened, like the money that was raised.
Oh, yeah.
So to think about how many people support his actions, right? And then for him being a young lad, of how much confirming of his own thoughts, his original thinking was like, oh yeah, people, they see it.
Yeah.
So in his mind, possibly not even still thinking that there was anything out of line really with.
No. I'm obviously doing the right thing. Look at all this public support I'm getting.
I'm just a patriot with a prayer.
That's it. That's it. Out here protecting our country. Keeping our streets safe. Like, I think it is, it will be helpful having statements from this one of these other militia members saying that he didn't feel like he was threatened by Rosenbaum at all. Like, he didn't need for it. I will say this, though. The one dude that said he felt like Rittenhouse was, what did he say, under-experienced and under-equipped, Ryan Bauck. He chose a very inappropriate time to take shots. I think he was just trying to, you know, put numbers on the board for himself. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, in comparison to me,
he was
under-equipped and under-experienced.
Yeah, the under-equipped was like a... That was basically like you came with the stock joint.
Right. What you mean? Listen, he went out there and killed people. He's over equipped. In no shape, form, or fashion is he under equipped. Ryan.
That's it. He didn't have the forged upper.
Chill out, Ryan. Anyway, it's good to be back, B. Make sure y'all check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 8 p.m. as you sit down and run up the numbers.
Run Up the Numbers, hosted by Can Jones and DJ Ambush. Music by C. All this for 50.
No way.
Yes, Lord.